In August 1948, a man stood before the House Un-American Activities Committee and uttered words that would forever change America. Alger Hiss was a communist and may still be one. With this declaration, Whitaker Chambers ignited what would become known as the Trial of the Century. The accusation was explosive. Hiss was a respected State Department official who had helped organize the United Nations. The ensuing drama captivated the nation, divided families, and exposed hidden communist infiltration within the American government. But behind this political earthquake was a deeply personal story. One man's journey from revolutionary to reluctant informer, and the moral struggle that would define his life. What makes someone abandon their ideological home, betray former comrades, and stand alone against overwhelming social pressure? This is the heart of Witness, Chambers' profound spiritual autobiography that Ronald Reagan would later credit with his own political awakening. What drives a talented young man to embrace an ideology promising global revolution? For Chambers, born in 1901, the path began with personal tragedy. His parents' bitter separation, grandmother's breakdown, and brother's suicide created emotional turmoil that coincided with post-World War I societal disillusionment, fertile ground for revolutionary ideas. I joined the Communist Party because I had made a critical judgment upon the world and everything in it, Chambers explained. The world was dying. This sense of civilizational collapse led the Columbia dropout to embrace communism as the only force offering both diagnosis and cure. His literary talents made him valuable to the party. By 1932, he became editor of The New Masses, the Communist Party's prestigious literary magazine, with his stories of communist heroism gaining acclaim. The decisive moment came when party leader Max Badakht invited him to join the Soviet underground. Despite his wife's tearful objections, Chambers was told, "You have no choice." As Bob, he severed ties with the open Communist Party and began coordinating government employees secretly working for Moscow. By 1937, Chambers' communist faith was cracking. Stalin's Great Purge had begun, with loyal revolutionaries executed on fabricated charges. His new Soviet handler, Colonel Boris Bykov, embodied the movement's moral corruption, cynical and mercenary, where earlier handlers had been idealistic. Disillusionment crystallized when Chambers read Professor Chernovin's I Speak for the Silent, a first-hand account of Soviet slave labor camps. Its simple, factual narrative pierced his soul. "This is evil, absolute evil. Of this evil, I am a part." His communist faith collapsed as he recognized that man cannot organize the world for himself without God. Without God, man can only organize the world against man. The birth of his daughter accelerated this transformation. When his wife refused to abort their child as party discipline required, Chambers realized that communist theory crumbled at the touch of the child. Breaking with communism in 1938 meant choosing the losing side. Their defection placed the family in grave danger, forcing Chambers to hide with his family, watching through nights with a shotgun as party operatives hunted them. When Nazi Germany and Soviet Russia signed their non-aggression pact in August 1939, Chambers warned Assistant Secretary of State Adolf Burrell about communist infiltration in government. His warnings were dismissed. President Roosevelt reportedly laughed them off. For 9 years, Chambers remained silent, building a respectable life as a Time magazine journalist and Quaker farmer in Maryland. By 1948, with Cold War tensions rising and communist takeover spreading across Europe and Asia, he could no longer stay quiet. The world he had warned about was materializing. When subpoenaed by HUAC, Chambers faced an agonizing choice. Testifying meant destroying his rebuilt life and betraying former friends. "I felt like prey about to be killed," he recalled of the night before his testimony. "I deliberately numbed myself so only my body could be torn, knowing the soul cannot endure such violation without dissolving in panic." After prayer and reflection, Chambers recognized his entire life had prepared him for this moment of witness, choosing a difficult truth over personal safety. When Chambers named Alger Hiss as a former communist operative, few believed him. Hiss's credentials were impeccable: Harvard Law School, Supreme Court clerkship, high-ranking State Department official, making the accusation seem almost absurd. The investigation might have ended if not for Congressman Richard Nixon's persistence. In a dramatic confrontation, Hiss was forced to admit knowing Chambers under a different name, revealing numerous discrepancies in his carefully constructed narrative. The case turned when Hiss sued Chambers for libel, a catastrophic miscalculation. Chambers produced materials he had hidden years earlier, State Department documents in Hiss's handwriting and microfilm containing classified papers. These pumpkin papers transformed the case from one person's word against another's into concrete evidence. Throughout this period, Chambers endured public vilification. President Truman labeled the case a red herring, while the social elite rallied around Hiss. As Chambers observed, it was generally the best people who defended Hiss, the enlightened and powerful who paradoxically snapped their minds shut in a pro-Hiss psychosis. For Chambers, being an informer was his greatest agony. "To be an informer is something men shrink from instinctively," he wrote, acknowledging the cultural revulsion toward betrayal. Unlike wartime spies risking their lives, the ex-communist informer risks little while using special knowledge to destroy others, knowledge gained through shared faith and friendship. This moral burden nearly drove Chambers to suicide. After surrendering documents implicating Hiss, he acquired cyanide and contemplated ending his life. Walking through his winter woods, he sought guidance through prayer that became a stupor of distress. Clarity emerged through an unexpected image: a Russian revolutionist who self-immolated, protesting the flogging of fellow prisoners. This sacrifice illuminated Chambers' purpose as a witness to deeper truths about human nature and freedom. Throughout the trials, Chambers maintained that the case transcended personal conflict, representing a confrontation between two irreconcilable faiths, communism and Christianity, embodied in two individuals. The fundamental question was whether humans were merely material beings shaped by social forces or spiritual creatures with inherent dignity and free will. After Hiss's conviction in January 1950, Chambers found no vindication, only deep wounds. He resigned from Time magazine and retreated with his wife to Pipe Creek Farm in Maryland, both sanctuary and symbol of the agricultural life he viewed as authentic American values. Among simple farmers, Chambers found solace. Neighbor Paul Morlock visited, saying, "I don't know anything about communism. I'd rather be dead than be a communist. But what I say is this: when a man is down, that's when he needs friends to stand by him." This decency reinforced Chambers' faith in ordinary Americans. While intellectual elites scorned him, common people supported his witness through letters and messages. In his final years, Chambers found peace in his Quaker faith and farm life. Rising at 4 to write, he would share astronomical knowledge with his son during evening chores, pointing out constellations like Hercules with its nebula, another universe whose light traveled 34,000 years to reach us.